There was a difference I hadn't known between separating myself from the tribe and being separated from the tribe. Oh, I was still with them, but I was kept off to the side, under guard. My status was unclear. Outcast, probably. A prisoner, surely. Still useful. Maybe. Renki had screamed into my face, asking who would spin her a new spear, now that there was not a single weaver left. Asper had not spoken at all, but he surely cursed the day the tribe had acquired the clutch of supposedly blessed eggs that had hatched me. Others had said it out loud. She who runs on her own shall no longer sing with us. And Truss had been loudest of all.
Is this how I taught you to serve your foster tribe? You doom us all with your shrewd ideas. You shame me. You deny me my contribution to our survival, just because you're too sappy to accept what has to be done.
He might still get his chance to die all alone now. My body's warmth seeped into the night-cooled ground. I was a miserable, pale heap, bound to a cracked column to protect everyone, including myself, from the mad bouts of my ghost-shifted mind. And as I stared up into the murky morning sky, still clear of minor color shifts and scattered light that preceded a new wind, I knew they were right. I had been ghost-shifted. I had been blinded. The stars were not real. There was nothing but blackness up there. I had been wrong all the time, dreaming of greatness and of knowing everything. I had chased visions and embraced change like it was just a pretty color I could wear, while secretly smiling at the superstition the herders held against me, never letting me approach a weaver. Now the weavers were taken, because I had lied. Because I had failed to see that they were right. Not that anybody took the time to lay blame at my feet. They would be crest over tails, planning their next steps. I could hear them arguing. But it was just a waste of energy. Even if we stood a chance, we would never fight the one thing that let us thrive. Our herds, our cleansers, our silvery lifeblood in this wrecked land. Of course, without weavers, we would soon all be ghosts, and it would be a long drag down. We would wander the plains, deprived of our purpose, deprived of our calling and our sustenance. We hadn't needed the weavers to change the world, really, but as a reason to tread on, to lay claim to hostile territory, to sustain our foolish, desolate, stubborn way of living. We had never seen what they really were, until now that they were gone. And I was the only one. No. I had to give up this delusion. I had never been the only one. I knew nothing. To the disgruntled huffing of my guard, I started a cleansing song. It was too late for that, but I had to do something to steer my mind from the tantalizing vision, from the dread and the despair. When I heard the soft thud of foot pads on the ground, I thought somebody might try to gag me. But next came a strangled sound from my guard, while a weaver-spun chain dug into her trachea. That made me jerk out of my song. Under a cover of black fabric, I recognized the loam-spotted greens of Asper's scales. My first thought was that he had come to personally punish me, and when he stepped closer, I expected him to tell me he wanted me gone, that he couldn't bear to feed me one more share of spicy moth fry after all I had done.
They're gone because of you. Poor Peshk needs a brace because of you. And I can't build one because of you.
He stared down at me for a moment, his tail lashing. I cringed, which made him snarl even more.
What is it with you, crazy scout?
He took off his heat cloak and dropped it near the shadowed corner I was curled up in.
You're all sickly white.
I hooked the cloak with one claw and drew it to me cautiously. It's my mood, yes.
Then snap out of it. You'll need your skill after you've warmed up.
He swallowed, as if the next thing he was going to say had a foul taste to it.
They are debating. But it all ends up the same. We're going to leave, hoping to reach the settler townships and seek refuge there. They're packing already. We're abandoning our weavers.
He took out a small trimming knife.
Can't let that happen. Can't just leave my tin eaters serving this cluster haunt. So I figured you'd be the one to come up with another idea. I saw you talk to that ghost, like it made sense. Maybe you're shifted, and surely you're as unclean as a cesspool full of ground poison. But you've got a knack for communication with this thing.
With one swift slash, he cut through my rope. I didn't move, just sat numbly, completely baffled. And I wondered if everybody had this one breaking point that made them fall from grace. This might not be in the tribe's best interest, I said softly. What if I don't come back, and you'll have to run without a scout?
Wrong time for regrets,
Asper snarled, and he sounded strangely like trust to me when he had taught a lesson. Then he tossed me my tools and turned around to sit next to the guard and check on her.
Go make some sweet talk to this ghost of yours, or rip its heart out. I don't care. Just get Tin Eater back to me. Bring the weavers, or don't come back at all.
The moment I moved out of reach, he took up the cleansing song I had abandoned. There were many reasonable things I could have wished for as I passed through the yawning portal into the dome again. That I knew a secret tune to make the weavers follow me out just like that. That I had Truss at my side to hold me back with a sharp hiss from making yet another stupid mistake. That I could run the plains with my tribe and our herds whole and sound, and leave this place alone. I might face the true power of the cluster haunt now, not the gentle inducements of the being I had dubbed Orion. A name it hadn't responded to any longer, after it had turned on us. I was very much afraid that any bond Asper relied upon might have existed in my imagination only. Foolish as I was, the thing I really wished for was that it hadn't forgotten my name. But Orion was nowhere to be seen. I could tell, because in plain daylight, the murky darkness of the dome wasn't absolute. High up, where some of its ceiling panels were missing, shafts of light sliced down all the way to the ground in cascades of dancing dust motes. And there was a flurry of ghost activity, faintly blinking lights, ghostly chatter emanating from various objects, all clocked to the clinking and whirring of the weavers. It was every sane person's nightmare, but I was beyond fear. Or so I thought, because when Orion did descend upon me out of thin air, I blanched, flinched, and pinched my tail under a metal pedestal I knocked over while fighting for balance. Before I could lift it, two weavers scuttled over and hoisted it back up. I very slowly backed away. Little explorer Mink, adding some defects again, aren't you? But don't you worry. Mistakes happen, and I've got so much help now. Orion drifted closer and lowered his voice. We're not officially reopened yet. You are a regular visitor, though, and I'm so glad to see you're back, and unharmed, too, so I'm willing to make an exception. A special tour just for you. What do you say? Part of me wanted just that, to lose my unhinged, ghost-shifted self in visions. I swallowed. Actually, I'm not here to visit you. I'm here for the weavers. I indicated three of the creatures, spinning upwards from the floor, thread after thread, grabbing shards with their long legs to absorb and fuel their weaving, while building something that looked like it would go on top of the pedestal. They don't belong in here. They are the herds of my tribe, you see, and we need them back.
Weavers, you have a knack for names, little explorer mink. But you must understand, the ATUs are no playthings, and they are doing what they are made for. They are not mine to give back, but they do good work, and they are well cared for. Just imagine how many visitors will take delight in this place after all those pesky defects are behind us. I took a deep breath. I very much detested breaking things, and it had been nice. Nice to get to know someone who wasn't aware of the brokenness of the world, who didn't live under the constant pressure of survival. It had been nice, but it was the only leverage I had. There is something you should know. I worked my jaw for a moment, like something old and awful was lodged between my teeth. They are not coming. Nobody is coming. There are no visitors anymore.
Little explorer.
Orion's gloved hand went up to his bowl-shaped head.
What are you saying? That's nonsense. Right?
I came close to him, and I wished I could have reached up and taken the sides of the bowl in my hands to look into those elusive eyes and to have something to cling to, because it hurt what I had to do. It's true. Look at all those defects. And believe me, you got off lightly in here. The defects outside are numberless. And I sung him the oldest parts of the tribe song, the way the elders had sung it to me as a hatchling, lest I forget how the world became broken and the reign of demons had ended when they choked on their own corrupted breath after their insatiable thirst for knowledge had undone them. When I sang no more, Orion was silent for a long time. He didn't even hover or flicker. I tried to stay equally unmoved. The tribe, the herds, the running, hearts thumping up our chest. That was what mattered, not a ghost and his grieving. I was built to teach, he stated finally, his voice unquavering and strong. And I thought that maybe his hidden lungs weren't built to produce the sobs buried underneath. I was built to inspire new achievements. If it's all gone, and I'm all alone, why am I still here? I had no answer for him. Ghosts despise the living, that was why, and I knew that he did not. Orion looked up again, a hint of eyes gleaming under the bowl. But you will come. You and your tribe. You returned after all. You want to learn. I laughed. It sounded like choking. Learning was what had gotten me into this wretched situation in the first place. No, Orion. We won't. I'm sorry. My tribe is fear-stricken by your presence. You have proven yourself a true cluster haunt by taking our weavers. You are the doom of my people.
But everything will be fine in here soon, he insisted. Zero defects. And you'll like the stars, I promise. Orion, there are no stars.
I had the distinct feeling that I was about to tear his heart out with words alone, and I had to speak around the lump in my throat. The veiled moon is a silvery blotch gliding through the upper fumes. And the stars, they are gone so long, they are not even in the tribe song,
a whisper of clear lights shining through the dark fabric of the night to give us comfort. But we can't afford to believe in comfort. There is only blackness. Is that so? Orion moved again, and this was the first time he tried to touch me. His fingers passed through my cheek, leaving faint traces of heat.
You should believe in comfort. It makes you reach out again after you fall. How else would you advance? When we set out to reach the stars, there were many who would have held us back. It's a risk, they said. A waste. But we sent our eyes up into the skies, and we saw worlds up there. We have always had to cross the blackness, Mink. And it has always been vast and intimidating. We have always fallen. But this place is a monument to our resilience, and it has seen visitors from afar who brought back the evidence of those worlds. As its guardian, I was never intended to go myself, but I saw the blackness could be crossed. And you should have trust in that too, Mink.
My mind went back to those pristine, luminous worlds of the vision, and there was comfort in the thought of them out there. I could not condemn this comfort, even if it made my heart want to reach out and find a way to get there. Even if I needed to embrace ghost shifting to get only one step closer. And I did. Show me. He clasped his hands behind his back and nodded gravely. After a while, a weaver came scuttling out of the gloom to stand close to me and pinch me in the upper calf. In one of its legs, it held something, pressing it urgently into my hand as soon as I crouched. I looked at the smooth oval in my palm, then back at Orion.
Your memory vault. I told you not to forget it next time you leave.
I'm not leaving. I want you to show me your vision. Orion shook his head.
No, not only you. Bring your tribe. Let me show them. Only this one time. I am not your enemy. But this is the price I demand for giving back the weavers.
Never would the elders bring what was left of our tribe into the lair of the cluster haunt again. Never would they trust my word, ghost-shifted as I was. And yet, I wanted them to see. I wanted to be with them again. And that would never happen when my dreams lived among the stars, while theirs had to cross the blackness. I'll try, but my voice in the tribe song is small.
Nonsense, he said. I heard you sing. There's nothing wrong with your voice. Just use it. Educate them.
He was right. They needed to know. And I had never made the effort to tell them anything. It had been easier for me and easier for them to carry on as we had always done. But there were other worlds. Worlds not lost to corruption and poison. This was a vision as true as any prediction of our wind reader. This was hope. It would be hard work, but I had to make them understand, even if it meant breaking what was left of trust and love. Even if the only thing to speak in my favor was the prospect of a happy reunion with our herds. Then Orion explained to me in detail how I would get the weavers back after the performance. If I hadn't believed him before, I would have done so now, because it was a sound plan. It was, in fact, a plan I had executed many times before. And as soon as I grasped what he wanted me to do, I threw up my hands and said, "No. I won't do that, Orion."
"But you must. As I said, the weavers are not mine to give back. When I initiated habitat security, they were integrated in the defense matrix,
I can command them to repair while there is no threat, but I can't undo their integration. Security is automated. I didn't understand, and I didn't care. I shook my head. Orion waited very patiently by my side while I came up with other plans, waited very patiently while I cried, and waited very patiently while I added one or three defects by kicking things. But the world was less patient. It barged in on me when Asper crashed through the entrance, the fear in his voice overshadowed by the greater horror that must have driven him to brave the Cluster Haunt's lair yet again.
"Blessed," he cried. "You have to lead us in the rush now. The camp was breached by a rust-breed vanguard. They have followed us."
We were nomads, and we didn't get to keep things, not even dreams. So I tried to shake it all off while I followed Asper into a nightmare. People were securing exhausted young ones to their chests or trying to force up the wounded, while right in the middle of the camp, Renki and her fighters fell back against the rust breed, despite battling fiercely. Vanguard attacks were meant to delay and cripple until the arrival of the colony, and if they had to impale their sinuous bodies on our weapons to shower us in acids, they would do just that. Already the ground sizzled with ochre blood. Everybody made way to let me take my place at the head of the column, to lead us to the quickest path out into the open, where we could outrun them. But my eyes searched for Truss's pallet, where he would die alone, as was his duty. And my mind went back to the dome, to my voice rising up through its stillness, stirring the dust of centuries. I knew a safe place right under our noses. I could still get us out without anyone being left behind. "No need to run," I told those nearest to me. "Bring your young ones into the dome. It's safe, I promise. The Cluster Haunt will protect us." They didn't move, of course, but I went on, louder now. "I bargained for our protection. Our weavers will defend us in the dome. You have seen what they are capable of. These walls are indestructible. It is our best and only chance. Go!" Most of them muttered madness at me, but some snuck glances at the dome, leaving our formation with tentative steps. Others kept looking at the elders.
"Get back!" the wind reader yelled, ushering them on. "Don't listen to this ghost-shifted rambling. We run!" "But the Blessed is right."
I hadn't noticed Asper staying with me in the fray. He had leapt onto a crumbling wall, waving his heat cloak like a banner.
"Our weavers are in there. I won't leave them. I say let's go and make a stand there. We've got nothing to lose."
I saw the eyes of the herders shift. Terrified, yes, but flecked with mad determination as they grabbed what they had dropped in the wake of the attack and started to run for the dome. A few first, but drawing more and more after them. And I saw Renki lose every battle she was in and buckle when she finally called her fighters to her side to cover our retreat. And just like that, the tribe was on the move. I went to find Truss and lifted his dry, grunting weight upon my shoulders. He didn't quite struggle, but he did snarl.
"Don't you dare deny me my choice. Leave me and do what the tribe needs of you."
"I am," I snapped. "And you can thank me later, or still make use of your choice then." He huffed, but sagged against me in defeat. The tribe had decided after all, just beyond the tube entrance. Their courage left them, though, and they all stopped dead in their tracks. The space was brimming with ghost activity.
"Orion," I shouted, shouldering my way to the front, Truss still with me.
"Where are you?"
"Mink."
The ghost blinked to life in all his silvery splendor between two shafts of light in the middle of the dome, making my people surge back against the walls.
"I'm glad you came back. Come on, everything is prepared for the show."
"We're not here for the show. Please, Orion, you need to protect us. There's rust breed at the threshold, and my people need shelter. Help us." The spear fighters defending the entrance shot frantic looks at Orion as he drifted closer, But the warden called them back in line with a disdainful growl and motioned others to move up as replacements should they fall. "I see," Orion said, and my heart leapt when I felt his light-hearted nature yield to the gentle profoundness I had come to trust. Harm to visitors is to be avoided at all costs. Initiating habitat sealing. An inaudible command brought in our herds. From all directions, they converged upon the entrance. The staccato of clinking legs made it sound like we had acquired an army. Smoothly, they flowed into precise lines, passing down chunks of material to the tube opening, where the silvery creatures began to weave upwards from the ground and downwards from the ceiling. Most herders just stared in astonishment, but some whooped and called their weavers' names, and a few ventured out to gather rubble for them. Not every fragment went into the quickly growing wall, though. Some ended up in scalding spurts directed at our enemies. It was messy. Three weavers were thrown back in a spray of acid as they clung to the red-tipped mandibles of a rust-breed soldier to keep it from rearing. One of our fighters went down, hundreds of chitinous legs crawling all over him. He was still screaming long after he had been pulled back out. But soon, there was only room left for a single rust breed to squeeze through. And then, not even that. The entrance was sealed, and we stood in silence, apart from the occasional thud when one of the creatures flung itself against the freshly spun concrete slab. The tribe huddled together in the open space of the dome, eyeing me, the elders, and Orion. Some lowered the young ones to the floor, still holding their hands. Some flicked their tongues.
"What now, little Foster Hatch?"
I was kneeling next to Truss, trying to check his bandages. He slapped my hands away, but he was no longer bristling with fury, his crest drooping in concern instead.
"Seems we are not to become rust-breed sustenance yet. But what do we eat? We don't have a grub's worth of food with us, and they won't go away as long as their prey is so close."
I looked up into the fearful faces of my tribe, who had trusted me in a way I would never have thought possible. "We have our weavers, and we have Orion. Surely there is something we can come up with." It took a long time to get them to talk. Half of them still believed the cluster haunt had set this as a trap for us, and they were unwilling to go near it. A few even snuck on their dread screen, which they had brought with them of all things. Orion was no help either, curiously hovering close, displaying some tricks to get the attention of the young ones. The tribe had settled into an uneasy camp formation, a few lone bug catcher lamps marking as a perimeter, its guards clearly at a loss. Those lamps gave us an idea at last. As soon as I had gotten the herders to talk, not about our predicament or the implications of conversing with a cluster haunt, but about the glorious things their weavers could build together, they were unstoppable. Ideas flew back and forth, with Orion chiming in with detailed knowledge.
"These possibilities, blessed. Mink."
Asper clasped my upper arm as if I weren't the uncleanest being he had ever met. Still, I was not one of them. I had no clue what exactly they had planned to build, but the gleam in Asper's eyes told me it would be magnificent.
"There is enough plastics in here to burn the whole colony to the ground."
In our lamps, we used a burning paste spun from plastics. The weavers would tunnel deep and build some contraption to saturate the ground the rust breed crawled upon and burrowed in, until all that was needed was a single spark, while we sat safely here in our indestructible dome.
"Of course you will have to learn to control the ATUs for this project, little engineers," Orion told them. "I can't do it for you."
The herders were too agitated to notice, but his tone alerted me. There had been a calm finality in Orion's words that suggested he was not planning to participate.
Why not? Asper asked. I'd like to learn, but we are in a tight spot right now. I'd prefer to be educated when nothing tries to break in and eat me.
Nothing will breach these walls, little engineer. But you won't be able to learn from me afterwards. There are rules, hard-coded rules I have to adhere to. I cannot order the ATUs to break down the interior of my visitor center to form flammable components. I cannot add defects. Habitat destruction is beyond my authorization. As is sending the weavers out of the habitat to tunnel as long as they are integrated in the defense matrix. You have to take your weavers back. Mink knows how. I jumped up from the resting place I had found when they had gone into technical details. I told you no, Orion. The others looked at me in puzzlement. They didn't understand. I had not abandoned my old teacher, and I wouldn't abandon my new one, even if he had found better students now. The stabs of jealousy I had felt since Orion had begun to focus his enthusiasm on the herders subsided, though, when he took me to the side. I can't give them back, so I need your help, and I'm very sorry for your inconvenience. He hovered closer, so close that for the first time I got a look beyond the bowl and saw more than just a hint of his eyes. They were bright and very blue, luminous like the worlds I had seen in his vision.
Mink, most curious of explorers. You should know that nothing will change if you keep clinging to the long-forgotten remnants of the past. I don't belong here, and you know it. You opened my eyes to it. It would be a sad existence indeed to stay back with this knowledge, waiting forever. And I would have no one else lay me to rest.
No, laying to rest is for ghosts. You are something else, Orion. I gave you a name. You showed me the worlds. I flicked my tongue affectionately now, and in affect, because it passed through him yet again.
Then save what's left of me.
He drifted backwards, beckoning me to follow him.
Not these outdated projections, but what I stand for. This is my purpose, after all. Educating the next generation about becoming explorers, builders, spacefarers. Now go, and save your tribe.
He had led me to the gigantic metal tube and pointed up its sleek form. Above its upper end, where it was still fastened to the ceiling, one of the dome segments was missing, big enough for a lithe scout to squeeze through. I shook my head with eyes closed, imagined one way it would all end if I did nothing, and another, all equally grim. When I finally buckled, I swallowed everything I wanted to say and turned to technicalities. If I go, will there be enough time to teach them what they need to know? They are quite adept already. They might have used high-tech tools to build spoons, but they are master builders in their own way. I'll teach them everything they need to know about ATU coordination. I'll try to attend the process as long as I can. But as you know, residual energies are nothing but a short echo. He came closer, as if to take me in his insubstantial embrace. I wasn't entirely sure if I really felt his warmth or just imagined it.
I'm sorry you have to do this, to go into danger for me. But I'm glad you found me. I truly am, Mink. I'm glad I was not forever alone. Now, don't you worry. Just remember, beyond the darkness, worlds are waiting.
What I saw when I climbed the rocket tube to the outside of the dome was a sea of writhing, russet bodies. Rust-breed reek permeated the air. Legs clattered like an upcoming storm. It made me understand, more than anything else, that there was no way for me to go back down and sit it out, to wait for another plan, a miracle, a change of rules, would have been madness. There was a hard-coded rule of the tribes. Nobody survived a rust-breed colony. Vanguard, yes, even the first waves of the colony proper. But those below had already settled in, infesting the whole area. And yet I might be able to save everyone. Everyone alive, at least. I looked down through the hole in the ceiling one last time. Even Asper still shied when Orion came close to point something out, and the others kept more than a healthy distance. They did not trust him like I did, but I hoped their shared passion for the Weavers and Orion's attempt to entertain those who were not involved in building would keep the tribe from panicking. I turned away and camouflaged. Everybody thought it easy, that I just had to press against any random surface and magically took on its color. But it's not like that. It's a process, a transformation, and it's more than scale deep. The colors are a mental thing. My whole body wanted to scream danger in bright yellows and reds, and I had to convince it to calm down. When I felt positively invisible, I took up the rope and began my treacherous way down the side of the dome. Even camouflaged, it was harrowing to see this dead place writhe with a host of centipedes prepared to tear me apart. After our first flight, there was not much left in my vial of extract from rust-breed scent glands, so I didn't fiddle with droplets, but threw the whole thing to shatter far from the place where they were clustered, obsessed with this frustratingly thin wall separating them from a tribe's worth of a feast. The whole ground seemed to ripple as they moved to investigate. And I was able to slip past the few remaining patrols. I was possibly the very first scout to be led to a heart chamber by the ghost's own words. It was located in one of the tall, broken buildings, beyond debris-strewn staircases, descending far down into the bowels of the earth, into labyrinthine hallways with doors Orion had taught me to navigate. A true cluster haunt hideout, if ever there had been one. The entrance was signed in the way he had said it would, and I made short work of its grade 4 lock with a vial of potent acid. This was, after all, my trade. I closed the door carefully behind me, then I looked around. And the moment I saw what this room was, my chest ached for Orion. It was a cauldron of ghosts. It was a grave. On its other end, massive veins behind a metal grate streamed air into my face, sufficiently cool to immobilize anyone exhausted enough to give in to the cold. There were hearts aplenty, rack upon rack, neatly placed in their boxes. But only one was still beating. Orion. I stood transfixed by the slow pulses of light emanating from the box. Placed my hand upon it, like I had never been able to with his manifestation in the dome. Then I began to chant, because it was the only way to get moving again, to sink into the routine of a duty I had done so very often. As I took down my tool stash and put on my gloves, I sang the song of passing, to tell the ghost that the sins of the past would be set right, and there was no reason to linger. But I soon slipped into my own verses. I sang of the vastness of the fallen world and the vastness beyond, and I hoped it was bearable, because he had my voice guiding him along. I sang of worlds beyond the blackness and a bowl full of stars, and I took my engraved pliers and plucked and cut at the right places, as gently as I could, and with a touch I hoped conveyed love, not violence, until the very last bluish light on the heart slowly faded. A noise I had not perceived till now ground to a halt, and the breath of cool air on my face died. I let my own breath go in an anguished rush and slumped down on the lifeless heart box, without a care for my unprotected face and arms. At the afterthought of residual energies, I jerked up. Maybe there was still time for a proper farewell. I forcefully banned my grieving paleness and ran. I came back to a darkened dome. I knew what to anticipate. Weavers under the control of our tribe again, flowing together to use up all the interior material of the visitor center to build secretly under the earth, slowly but steadily creating the trap. The moment the weavers came together for their task, the rust breed were dead already, their time burning down with every spun thread of tunnel, pipe, fuel, until they faced their immolation. I should have been glad to see the plan in motion. Still, when I saw no ghostly lights shine from within the dome, my heart sank. I was too late. The last emanations of Orion had occurred without me. But then I heard the music. Of all the things he could have repaired, of all the things he could have done with his last energies, he had chosen his beloved music. It was indeed very inspiring, swelling like the songs of a dozen tribes woven into one, ethereal, rising ever higher, tugging at the soul, and then taking it along in a thunderous rush. The hexagons of the ceiling had been shaded to blackness, and I scampered down the metal tube of the rocket into a darkness, speckled with the fearful eyes of my tribe, under this display of ghostly power. Because there was also light. Lights dotted the blackness, clear and bright, beckoning, shining through the fabric of the artificial night. A few lone pinpoints first, then scattered, scintillating clusters, until an abundance of lights pulsed above us. And as I came to stand among my people on the ground and let my gaze be drawn up, it was as if the domed ceiling had dissolved into an infinite, vast space, stretching out forever before our eyes, close enough to touch, if we just strove to reach it. None of us had ever seen the stars, but our hearts recognized them. They look like so many camps in the sky, bug catcher lamps in the darkness, and I could not have been the only one to wonder what tribes lived up there. Nobody made a sound, and only when the surging song Orion played for us ascended into our own paean of manifest horizons did they move, like a collective sigh. And I could see that he had entered their hearts now, that he had become our ghost, with his last show, his star-laden farewell. Renki was studying their faces as well, and when she caught me looking, she simply nodded her acknowledgement. And so when the weavers began to move, precisely coordinated, and when we began to hear the rust breed blindly throwing themselves at the walls again, not knowing that even now their doom was in the making, and when the stars winked out in large swaths, and it all went dark, our tribe sang on in the vast blackness, sang verses of new horizons, and our ghost guiding us, and our voices filled the dome like an elegy, like a hymn, and took on a shape of their own, a shape of things to come. When we set out to weave us away to the stars, we knew we pledged the lives of our clutches to wandering the wastes. Generation after generation, we would scourge the ruins of the broken world for lost knowledge, our herds converging on molten glass seas to build miracles we had never dreamed of. We are no mere survivors anymore. We are still adapting to our changed existence as our starlit minds keep finding new paths in this old world. Our gaze is set upwards now, out to unpoisoned spheres, out to unveil the moon, and what lies beyond. We will never be starless again, and this is the greatest gift, a glittering song to complement our own with hope. When I walk the acrid sands with my ghost-shifted tribe, our two newly adopted gear beasts trundling along, I know I will not be the one to actually bring us to the stars. This will fall to Asper, who teaches our future builders and planners to control their weavers, and to paint them, too, for beauty, not out of fear. My contribution to the tribe song is small, but as I tell it once again, I'm clutching the memory vault, the only thing I took for myself from the visitor center that is now but an empty, scorched husk. They are like small eggs, those memory vaults. I'm not a fool. Most eggs come to nothing, I know. But maybe something will hatch. Maybe there is something left of Orion in there. I'll give it to the next scout after me, and she will give it to the next, and the next, until Orion's song reaches the stars. Because as small as this contribution is, I know there will always be need of us who find new ways to cross the blackness and dream of the worlds beyond.